You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Susie Quattro, and you are listening to Pantheon Podcast.
History in five songs with host Martin Popoff. A production of Pantheon Podcasts. Let's rock out with Martin.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back again to another episode of History in Five Songs with Martin Popoff, brought to you by the good people at Pantheon Podcast. We are pleased, as always, to be part of this fast and always expanding Pantheon Podcast network of wise music swamis. We're available on Spotify, iTunes, Megaphone, and over 40 other podcast platforms. All right. This is episode 205. I'm calling this Triple Crown Rockers. So the idea here is something I've always said about two people in particular, and we're going to rise in intensity through these five examples to get to my favorite shining examples of this. The idea here is rock stars, rockers of one stripe or another, be they vocalists, singers, bass players, guitar players, whatever, drummers, who have been on three different classic albums, like unheralded classics, by three different bands. So they've been in three different bands, and not just been in three different bands or more than that, but they have like a kind of a stone cold classic in each of these three different bands. So there's a couple examples I've always, you know, there's really, out of these five, there's probably only one that anybody would, you know, pretty much not dispute. And then everything else has, a little bit of a flaw where it might be me personally thinking that album is a classic. We will kind of get to that as we go along. But I also wanted to do this episode as an interesting way to pay tribute to one of these. And he's going to show up in the third slot here. So yes, again. So the idea, Triple Crown Rockers, three different classic albums by three different bands. And like I say, it's going to rise in richness towards number five as we go here. So let's take a listen to our first track. This is Thin Lizzy with This Is The One.
My brain is destroyed. I got to find a new vocation. I feel it burning down inside. Such a low down vibration. Inside it hurts my pride. I hear it, I know it, I touch it, I feel it, I see it. Someday we will have one.
All right, so our first rocker here is John Sykes. John Sykes, I definitely wanted in here for a couple of reasons. So this is a guy who started an English guitarist, right? Bit of a troubled guy. You don't see him very much. We know he's kind of difficult to work with. He's very, very meticulous. So he takes a long time to do stuff. Doesn't seem to care if it comes out or not, sort of thing. Anyways, he started in a new wave of British heavy metal band called Street Fighter. But his first sort of claim to fame is he jumps onto the Tigers at Pantank for their second album, Spellbound. Came out April 10th, 1981. I'm going to call that the classic. It's one that's been rising in my estimation over the years. Most people regard it as a really good new wave of British heavy metal album. But he's also on Crazy Nights, which I really love as well. I mean, I'm torn which is my favorite Tigers album. It could be literally any of the first three, even including Yes, The Cage, which is short and poppy. But it's really well put together and good songs. But yeah, love the debut, love Spellbound, love Crazy Nights, and even The Cage. And this is kind of interesting. I mean, John is actually on two tracks on The Cage, Love Potion Number 9 and Danger in Paradise. But okay, so let's, for argument's sake, call Tigers of Pantang Spellbound John Sykes' first classic. His second classic would be Thin Lizzy, Thunder and Lightning, which you just heard. This is the one, is a great storming rocker, kind of a forgotten track sometimes off of this album. But yeah, so this album is a very, well, we're actually probably going to do it in our new Contrarian series where it's what is the most contrarian album by a band. This is probably the best one for Thin Lizzy. So yeah, this was a heavy, harsh album produced very uncharacteristically by Chris Changiridis. But so he comes in and he basically remolds the band in his image as this screaming, flashy, heavy metal band. You know, it really doesn't have a lot of the Thin Lizzy hallmarks, the soft, sympathetic, pillowy, billowy twin leads. You know, with Scott Gorham is still the other guitarist in the band there, but really it's kind of the John Sykes show. You know, I've often called Baby Please Don't Go my favorite solo of all time, right? So the next classic he's on is Whitesnake, or Whitesnake 1987. He's also on the U.S. version of Slide It In, but, you know, the Whitesnake album is an absolute classic. It's multi-platinum. I don't know, I think it's 8 times platinum, something like that. So March 23rd, 87 for that. Thunder and Lightning was March 4th, 83. So yeah, we've got John Sykes in the Tigers, in Thin Lizzy, and in Whitesnake. And, you know, I want to say, you know, to get on this list of these hallowed five that we're doing here, I want to say that, you know, in most cases, you have a big part of it. It's a big part of the identity. I've often said this as well on Whitesnake's Still of the Night. I've often called that the greatest guitar riff of all time, right? You know, I'm not a massive fan of much of the rest of the album. You know, I love the production on it. It's very heavy and huge and smothering sounding for a, you know, quote unquote hair metal album. This is a hair metal band with all sorts of, you know, pedigree to it. It's a little bit of a different band, but you know, you wouldn't know it by the hair and the clothes, but yeah, it definitely has that. So John Sykes is our first example. So let's move on to our second one. Take a listen to this. This is Black Sabbath with Falling Off the Edge of the World. Okay, so our Triple Crown rocker in this case is Vinny Appice, the younger brother of Carmine Appice. Carmine Appice's been on a lot of albums, but sad to say, I can't think of a single classic album Carmine Appice has been on the same way Vinny has. For Vinny, it starts with, it starts with Hand Claps with John Lennon, but that doesn't really count. But it really starts with Derringer Sweet Evil. So not the Derringer Live album, not the Derringer album, but Sweet Evil. Yeah, most of us, a bunch of us, me and my buddies, whatever. We me and you guys, you know, we essentially consider Sweet Evil a drop-dead classic. It is a really cool kind of, you know, alternative Aerosmith or Ted Nugent album. It's heavy, it's riffy, it's super interesting. Man, I've often fantasized that it would be amazing if Zeppelin, I might have even said this here before, but if Zeppelin had opened the O2 concerts with a cover of Sitting by the Pool. That's so Jimmy Page, what goes on there. But yeah, this is a good, solid, you know, Jack Douglas produced Very, very, like I say, Aerosmithy album. Very exciting. Lots of cool stuff on it. Good drumming as well. So he is an integral part of this band. So that's his first classic. The second classic he's on is what you just heard this from. Black Sabbath, Mob Rules. He's not the drummer on Heaven and Hell, but he's the drummer on the Heaven and Hell tour, or much of it. Beginning in Hawaii. I've heard that whole story is pretty interesting. But anyways, he's on the Mob Rules album. This is obviously a drop-dead classic. Everybody loves Mob Rules. Great album. Went gold, I believe. I think it's gold at this point. November 4th, 1981. And then the third band that Vinnie Appice is on an absolute drop-dead classic with is Dio Holy Diver. But take your pick. You know, I did a Contrarians episode of calling Dream Evil my favorite Dio album. I'm really close with, though, Holy Diver, The Last in Line, and Dream Evil. And Vinny's on all of those, which is very cool. He's not on every Dio album, but so he's in there as well. He's a huge part of the sound. His drumming is so distinctive and interesting. And, you know, it's actually not particularly showy, but it really has this cool trademark of his. He has really interesting snare work. He does this thing where he starts the fills pretty early, but he's so rock solid that it's dependable when he does it. Beautiful, beautiful sound. It's tough to have a signature sound as a drummer, and Vinnie absolutely has that. You know, he's also on Axis, It's a Circus World, not a great album. He's on World War III, that's a pretty cool album with Mandy Lyon. And then, of course, he's also in the Heaven and Hell band later on, and on a whole pile of other projects that are actually really, really cool. So Vinny's out there in the world in a big, huge way, but I would say he definitely fits this concept. So we've got Derringer, Black Sabbath, and Dio. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here, taking a break from listening to a little Shout It Out Loudcast episode. Love Tom and Zeus talking all things Kiss. Of course, I was listening to them on my new Raycon wireless earbuds. They have quickly become my go-to earbuds because of the comfort. These soft tips are the best I've ever used. And at this price, plus a Pantheon discount, Raycon is really hitting on all marks. Sound quality is great too. I really love having these three EQ options because I like more bass in the music, but less in my podcast. 8 hours of playtime for the battery is great as well. Surround sound, noise isolating, and awareness mode are all included. These are great earbuds. Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon. Hey, Pantheon listeners, Christian Swain here. Another day, another podcast I'm working on. This time, it's Famous and Gravy with Amit and Michael. I want to let you know that I loved the Factor Meals package so much that I re-upped for myself, and then I sent a package to my in-laws. Like I was with my first shipment from Factor Meals, the in-laws were as excited to try one of the prepared restaurant-quality meals. Well, they got the shipment of Protein Plus meal plan and were very impressed. See, being in their 80s, anything to make the meal prep easy is a plus for them. They heated the oven per instructions and minutes later were enjoying a very delicious, nutritious, and dietitian-approved meal. One big win for me. But what really floored them was the taste. Like I told you, it's surprising how good these meals taste. Restaurant quality indeed. And like my own shipment, it really was everything Factor Meals said it would be for some seniors. No prep, no mess meals. Factor Meals are 100% ready to heat and eat. Take it from me and my in-laws. Head to factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. That's factormeals.com/pantheon50 and use the code Pantheon50 to get 50% off. Thank you, Factor Meals.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, Martin Popoff here, back again with another episode of History in 5 Songs with Martin Popoff, episode 205, Triple Crown Rockers. Let's take a listen to our third track now. This is The Damned with I Just Can't Be Happy Today. Okay, so here's where we pay tribute to the great Alistair Algie Ward. Died May 17th, 2023, age 63. He had a long illness. Troubled life, this guy. But basically, let's get to the accolades of why we call Algie a Triple Crown rocker. First of all, so he shows up on very likely, definitely a top five greatest punk albums of all time for me, The Saints, Eternally Yours. So he's not on the first Saints album, I'm Stranded. He's on Eternally Yours. Good, heavy, interesting album. I almost picked a track from that. I keep forgetting he's on Prehistoric Sounds as well. So he's on the next one, which was a huge disappointment because they basically stopped being heavy punk and became kind of like a Celtic soul, bluesy sort of band. The band broke up after that. And then they came back and became a really interesting, good kind of Celtic band. I should listen to more of that later Saint stuff again. It was really, really good. Yeah, we lost Chris Bailey as well. I got to interview him in person. He came through, I met him down at the Horseshoe in Toronto. But Algie Ward, so he shows up on, he's not a songwriter. He's just kind of the bass player in this band, but still, absolute drop-dead classic as far as I'm concerned. And what you just heard this song from is The Damned's Machine Gun Etiquette. So this is the third Damned album after they had already broken up after two albums. He comes back definitely having like fist fights and wrestling matches and hollering matches with the guys in the band. Algie was a hard guy to get along with, right? But he was very artistic, and we'll get to a little more of that in a second. But yeah, so here he is on this flamethrower of a punk album, an absolute punk classic. It's usually the Damned album people pick as their favorite Damned album. He's a really important, beating rock and roll heart of this band. He's just thrown into the mix with these other super difficult characters, and it's crazy. I mean, you think of those four guys together, and how did they even cope? Well, they didn't. I mean, basically, it couldn't last, and it didn't last. But yeah, that's a killer album. And then he shows up on, in Tank, Running Tank. He's on all the classic Tank albums, all the original Tank albums. And, it's his band. He was inspired by Motorhead. Tank gets produced by Fast Eddie, but he was inspired by what he liked about Motorhead. And Motorhead is such an Algie Ward type band. So Tank, I've always called like the thinking man's Motorhead. That's not to put down Motorhead, because Motorhead is thinking man's as well, but let's say this right here. Both Algie and Lemmy were superlative lyricists. They were great lyricists. Sense of humor, witty, just interesting stuff. But the reason I call them the thinking mans is the riffs are a little more complicated in Tank. And that was really cool about Tank. So they're kind of like a late arriving new wave of British heavy metal band. But pick your classic. I'm going to say the classic album that he's on is This Means War. The third album, it's a little more epic. It's only got, what is it, six songs on it? I think seven songs on it. So it's a little more epic, longer songs, a little more involved, a little more straight heavy metal, a little less Motorhead-y metal. But, I mean, you could pick Filth Hounds of Hades. You could pick Power of the Hunter. I'm usually in the minority liking Power of the Hunter so much. He's there on the later ones as well. And then what happens later on? So let me say this first of all. So I got to interview Algy once, and it was one of those difficult interviews. And I was thinking back to other ones that I could compare it to. And it's like you're talking with someone whose brain is working faster than their mouth because they're just kind of super interesting and intelligent, but nobody kind of really, they don't have a reputation for that, right? But also troubled, maybe a little bit of mental illness, maybe under the influence, drugs, alcohol. But, you know, invariably when this happens and I get on the line with someone like this, what else happens? So you've got somebody who's got they're on a cell phone, they're outside, their signal is dying, or they just got a bad line. And it usually turns out they've, to complicate matters, they've got a heavy accent that's hard to understand, and they're speaking muffly, and they're not speaking into the phone. You get the drift, right? I mean, all these things kind of combine, they're various personality traits that you could see lining up together, and it makes for a very difficult interview. And ones I've had like that, it reminds me of Stephen Kilby from The Church, felt a little bit like that. Ian McCulloch from Echo and the Bunnymen, who stood me up two or three times before I got him, and then I couldn't understand a damn thing he was saying. It was everything I just said felt like it was there with him. Andy McCoy from Hanoi Rocks, who's has this reputation as just being like a pathological liar. But he was a charming guy, but you know, you always wonder, like, you know, what's he's telling you? Is it the truth? And but again, most of all of the above. And Phil Rudd of AC/DC was like this as well. Like I say, everything, all of that combined. And you're right on, you know, it's a very difficult interview because you're on the edge of your seat and you don't know when to laugh at a joke because they're pretty quick-witted as well. So Algy Ward was like this. And Evo is kind of maybe a bit like this. Evo was Algy's best buddy. They collaborated on things later on. Evo is a super interesting guy. Ran Warfare, which is almost like the dirty metal version of Tank. So you go Motorhead, Tank, Warfare. But the last thing I want to say about Algy in tribute of Algy. So number one, so it's great. So he's a Triple Crown rocker. So he's on three absolutely classic albums by three different bands. But go and check out the Sturmpanzer album. He did these two albums later on when there was this troubled period later on where, you know, Mick Tucker was running one version of Tank and Algy was trying to say, no, I'm Tank and I'm running a version of Tank. And so, you know, Algy also had tinnitus or whatever it's called. But they used to say that was one reason it was really hard to get him for an interview because he could barely hear what you're saying on the phone. So obviously he's having trouble in an interview as well. Unfortunately, God love him, right? So I had this awkward interview, but still he said a lot of great stuff, right? But anyways, the point is Algy proves himself as a genius lyric writer and music writer and riff writer, even though he's the bass player, right? But he's the leader of Tank. When you go play this Sturmpanzer album. Now there's another one. So that's 2018, and he had a 2013 called Breath of the Pit. But Sturmpanzer, I was just playing it again before I got on, and I just marvel at how good those songs are. Now, people complain that it's electronic drums, but to me, the drums are not very distracting, and they sound pretty good. I mean, it's just a really good album. And so the last thing that, you know, the impression I had when I play those albums, I go, okay, A, it wasn't a fluke. This guy was super, super talented. He wasn't a big part of Saints or Dan, but obviously he was a huge part of Tank. This guy, it was no fluke. He was super talented. He was just a great songwriter all around, music writer. I love his vocals too. I haven't mentioned that yet. So he has this really cool, you know, Ace Frehley, imprecise, cool, kind of wisecracker, wiseacre sort of vocal style. He's a bit of a Lemmy. Loved it. I thought he had a lot of personality from the vocal position. But yeah, go, if you're a Spotify person, I'm sure it's on YouTube as well, but I noticed, you know, pleasant surprise, Sturmpanzer, believe it or not, is on Spotify and you can play it. And I think it's just brilliant songwriting. I think they did a great job. So there you go. There's our tribute to Algy Ward. Sadly, we just lost him at the age of 63. All right, let's play our fourth selection here. This is the Michael Schenker Group with Samurai.
Your eyes reflect the sun. Red as ebony blood.
Okay, so this is, we're getting to my top two examples of this, really. And I've always said this, the great Graham Bonnet. So Graham Bonnet has absolutely been on three Drop Dead classics by three different bands. This is the Michael Schenker Group, Assault Attack, August 22nd, 1982, produced by Martin Birch to beautiful, edgy, cool, you know, crisp clarity. The songs are amazing on this. So I think Graham Bonnet really, you know, brings the fire and the creativity and you know, forces Michael to do a really, really good album. It's a big improvement over the MSG album, the one just before it. And yeah, it's the only one he's on. You know, Graham on lyrics, you're starting to see Graham blossom as a lyricist. So the other great Drop Dead classic he's on is Rainbow Down to Earth. Now, I know I'm a little in the minority on that one, but I have done a Contrarians episode. I swear to God, Down to Earth, no problem, is my favorite Rainbow album of all time. And so this is a situation where he's joining a band. He's not a metalhead. Roger's in on a lot of the lyrics. Graham is not really proving himself as a songwriter yet. So, you know, you might look down on Graham and say, oh, is he an airhead? Well, no, he's not. He's just never done it before, and he didn't really get in the groove by the time of Rainbow, but he did get in the groove by the time of MSG. And then the third Drop Dead classic by a different band that Graham is on is Alcatraz No Parole for Rock and Roll, October 15th, 1983. I will maintain to the death that Graham is actually more important than Yngwie on this album to make it a classic, but Yngwie is super important as well. I think this is Yngwie's greatest album. He's an incredible guitarist with obviously a signature sound. Blew everybody away. And most people probably would say, you know, Yngwie is the big, you know, the other big thing that's a big, I think it's Dennis McKay, right? The other big thing about this album is the production, which is really radical and bright and doesn't have a lot of bottom end, but I still love it because it is so obscure and strange and eccentric, right? But yeah, the songs are great on here, and that's a lot of credit to Yngwie as well. The songs and the solos are great, but the lyrics are great as well, and that's a lot of credit to Graham. So there you go. And, you know, he proved also, I like that he proved that he was no fluke, because he's on later Alcatraz stuff as well, the next one before the breakup, or actually the next two, sorry, before the breakup. And then he's on a later one, and he's got the Graham Bonnet Band, the horribly, horribly named Graham Bonnet Band, but what a quality band. Great songwriting as well, and of course he's a super inspiration for being this old guy who sings super powerfully still, which is pretty incredible. And he's one of these singers, I've often said, he's one of these singers that you're right on the edge of your seat wondering whether his head is going to explode or his heart's going to explode or he's going to miss the note, because he has to push so much air to get there. He's looking like he's putting in so much effort to get there, but he does get there. He's a super powerful guy, and I love his lyrics, I love his writing. I think he's just really got a good head on his shoulders for this kind of music that he keeps saying, I'm not really a heavy metal guy, and yet all he does is makes heavy metal all the time, right? Pretty funny. But there you go. That's our number four. So we are rising in intensity here. Who do you think number five is? Take a listen to this. This is Dio with Invisible. She was a photograph, just ripped in half, a smile inside a frown, and then the light. Okay, so Ronnie, I think, is the best, most unarguable example of this. Ronnie James Dio, sadly, we've lost him as well. His first Drop Dead classic that he's on, no, it's not an Elf album. It is Rainbow Rising. It's not the first Rainbow album. Rainbow Rising is the one that pretty much everybody says is the greatest Rainbow album of all time. I loved it as a kid because it was the first album we ever heard where every single song was heavy on it. But Long Live Rock and Roll is incredible too. So yeah, May 17th, 1976, Ronnie is on his first of his Triple Crown albums. Second Triple Crown album he's on is Black Sabbath, Heaven and Hell. Unarguable classic, of course, April 18th, 1980. He's on Mob Rules as well, which we just talked about. And then he's on the album that this track we just played is from, Holy Diver with the band Dio, his namesake band. So I love the fact that our best example of this, he's the leader of the last band, just like Algie Ward, actually. So he's the leader of the band Dio, of course, the namesake. He's well in on the music writing, but all the lyric writing. Great album. Again, I could have picked Last in Line, which Ronnie, of course, is on as well, and every Dio album, of course. But I could have picked Dream Evil as well. And again, this is a guy that was in the Heaven and Hell band, so that's pretty impressive as well. So there you go. Ronnie is our fifth example, our best example here. I do have for you some honorable mentions, some not quite, some second tiers. You know, people that I considered for this, but I really didn't think got there. You can tell me if you think they get there. Let us know on the Facebook page. Glenn Hughes, you could probably, you know, go through the whole thing and start arguing that he's been on some amazing, amazing albums. For him, I would probably, you know, I would start my list off if I was trying to get to three, right? Because that's the challenge here. If I was trying to get to three, I would probably go with Deep Purple Burn. I would probably go with the Black Country Communion album, but man, some of those other, what was that, California, what was it called? California something. That was really cool. So he's been on a bunch of cool things. I wouldn't particularly go with the Black Sabbath album. I certainly wouldn't go with Hughes Thrall. That wasn't a good album. I don't think I'd pick a Trapeze album particularly. So I don't know if Glenn gets there. You let me know. What am I forgetting that Glenn was on? That was incredible. Ian Gillan, pretty close as well. With Ian Gillan, you could start with something like a Machine Head or an In Rock or whatever. So you got a Deep Purple album. I would say Gillan, Mr. Universe. But all those Gillan albums are good. But I love the fact that he is the leader of the band. It's like Dio and I. But again, it's like, you know, we're grasping at straws here. I think it's a classic. A lot of people do, but, you know, obviously it's lesser than the main classics we've been talking about here. And then, you know, you might pick something like Born Again by Black Sabbath. I mean, I think Ian is probably the very, very closest for me for having a history in six songs here, a sixth example. Okay, John Wetton, you might prowl, you know, trawl, scrounge through the John Wetton catalog and find your three classics. I think for me it would start with a classic, you know, a King Crimson album, something like Red. You know, do you want to throw in the First Asia? Do you think he's a part of a classic Heap album? Probably not. Roxy Music, I don't know. There are things he's been on. I'm sure I'm forgetting something, but nothing is really rising. I don't know. Greg Lake, is he in here? You know, I thought of the prog guys. You think, what genres are going to have this? Well, you're probably going to think prog guys because they're prolific. They jump around from bands, maybe more than other genres. And then you think of the positions. Would it be a lead singer? Because I don't want to put in people that are inconsequential particularly. And then you think of session people, but do they really count? I've got one of those to mention here as a not quite as well. But okay, so I thought of Peter Gabriel. No, doesn't get there, right? Absolutely on classics with Genesis and Peter Gabriel, but nothing else, I don't think, right? Bill Bruford, couldn't really get him there. Steve Howe, couldn't really get him there either. Sammy Hagar, couldn't quite get him there. You know, which is not a nice thing to say about Sammy Hagar, because obviously you could say he's on a classic Montrose album, and you start struggling with Van Halen a little bit, and then you also struggle with that massive Sammy Hagar album. Is there an absolute drop-dead classic album in the Sammy Hagar catalog? Probably not, right? Jimmy Bain? Could get close, right? You know, and it's almost like with Jimmy, I want to include a Phil Lynott solo album to get him there, right? David Coverdale, again, could get close. George Harrison, I thought you could get close, right? You could, something like an All Things Must Pass. You know, Beatles apparently have the odd classic album, right? And then Traveling Wilburys, right? So, yeah, maybe he gets close. Rob Halford gets close. You know, you think of Judas Priest, you think of Fight, if you can consider Fight having a great album. I think personally the second Fight's better than the first Fight. And then you think of Halford, Resurrection, right? So he's almost there, right? Danny Carmassi is close. Montrose, Gamma, But again, this is my personal taste. But then you got to get into Heart. And I happen to personally love to death the Passionworks album. So I'm almost there with Denny. Cozy Powell couldn't really quite get there. I'm sure I'm forgetting something. But, you know, you could go Rainbow Rising. At a stretch, you can go the second MSG. But I don't think he's on a classic Black Sabbath album. I don't think he's a great drummer in a lot of cases. I'm definitely not a big Cozy fan as a drummer. And then when I think of Cozy, I move over to Simon Phillips and think, but okay, so he's kind of a session drummer guy. He's not going on tour with these bands particularly. But he's on Judas Priest Sin After Sin. And he's kind of a big part of it, but he's not really part of the band. And then he's on the first MSG, which I think is a drop-dead classic as well. And then, you know, to get him over the hump, my favorite thing is he's one of a couple of drummers or three drummers on the first three absolutely amazing Pete Townshend albums. So, you know, I would put Empty Glass in there to possibly get him over the hump. And here's one that I personally believe could be a history in seven songs. So we've got Ian Gillan. And we've got this gentleman, Adrian Belew. I could really see putting him in here, but that's really a personal pick. He's one of my favorite rockers of all time across any genre. But I would put him in for The Bears, Rise and Shine, King Crimson Discipline, and Adrian Belew, Twang Bar King, or Lone Rhino. So yeah, I think he's a perfect fit for this as well. So there you go. There is your episode of Triple Crown Rockers. Let me know on the Facebook if there's someone I completely whiffed on and didn't find at all. If you like the show and want to support future episodes, please go to ko-fi.com. Rhymes with coffee. Boy, am I ever going to be able to say this properly? / Martin Popoff. Hit that red support button and buy me a coffee or a pint. It's a straight, simple PayPal, bing, bing, $3 kind of thing. Yes, on that front this week, I would like to thank Joe Becht, Andy at Black Sugar Transmission. Andy is part of my new Cure book that just came out. It's a panel book where I interviewed, you know, a bunch of mainly contrarians people, right? And we went through every studio album and did a Q&A on every studio Cure album. So that just came out. It's called Wild Mood Swings, Disintegrating the Cure Album by Album. You can get that at martinpopoff.com. So yes, thank you, Andy, Lee Clifford, Melissa Nee, Matthew Kieswetter, Monty Olson, Augustine Garcia de Paredes, Steve Pilleri, Aaron Steelman, very, very generous, Aaron. Thank you very much. Take a break, please. John Stuckey and Robert Yates. Again, martinpopoff.com for all your book needs. The big ones out currently, the big, swanky, expensive ones are Pink Floyd and Dark Side of the Moon, 50 years. AC/DC at 50 and Bowie at 75. But yeah, anything that is in print I have over at martinpopoff.com. I sign them, send them out from the office here. You got the illustration stuff, which I'm going to get back into. I'm doing illustration for a follow-up to Flaming Telepaths right now, but I want to get back into the old thing. You can go to martinpopoff.ca and see my gallery there of all the rock star portraits and the fake ads, or you can go to my gallery at ArtPal. Right? Did I say? Martin Pop. Yeah, Art Pop. There you go. So yeah. Thanks again for listening to this episode. Let me know if there are any other Triple Crown rockers that we missed. And go play and raise a pint. Raise a pint for Algie Ward and go play Sturmpanzer. Go play that obscure, weird Tank album that no one is ever going to hear unless I bring it up and remind people every once in a while. There you go, Sturmpanzer.
Find all of our shows, notes, social, and links at www.pantheonpodcast.com or wherever you listen to great podcasts. All songs can be found for purchase on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. Please purchase these great and important tracks. Find us on Facebook at The RNRAP. We are on Instagram at RNR Archaeology. Tweet us at R&R Archaeology.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Fernino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.